Today, I have for you a story of a young woman who fought for justice after her death for 30 years.
Welcome to Mistropolis, where we gather, talk about crimes, conspiracies, mysteries, and all that jazz. I'm a true crime fan. If you're a fangirl or a fanboy obsessing over true crime, come on in. I was waiting for you.
Hello, hi, welcome to Crime Story Gathering. Before I get into the true crime story of the day, please subscribe and like. Also share with someone who is into true crime just like you and I are. It begins, or should I say it comes together in a circle in fall of 1999. Mr. Hamid Tofagadi was at his newly purchased $455,000 house at 67 Forest Drive in Jericho, New York. He was at the residence for the final inspection before moving in with his family, making sure place is clean and everything was fine. He found a barrel in the crawl space beneath the house. He asked the previous owner, Mr. Cohen, and the real estate agent to have it removed. The previous owner, Mr. Cohen, contacted the sanitation department to have the barrel removed, but was sent in a note stating that they won't take it because it was jam-packed and there might be something toxic in it. So their condition was that if they open it and there is nothing toxic inside, the sanitation department would come the following day to pick it up. So three men took it upon themselves to open it with screwdriver and few tools. It was a 55-gallon industrial-sized barrel weighing about 345 pounds. After breaking a sweat, they managed to pry the lid open. They were jolted by the unpleasant stench, very bad odor, and inside they discovered a horrifying sight nobody wants to find in the newly purchased house. They could see a hand and a shoe sticking out. Law enforcement officers were called at the scene. It was confirmed that it was indeed a human body, but for how long it had been there, no one knew. Police also brought in some cadaver dogs to look into the property for any other carcasses. Barrel was taken into the custody, and on closer inspection, they noticed black and white plastic pellets surrounding the body, and there were not just some pellets general public would have access to. They took more than 2 hours to carefully take out the mummified body. The body was of a woman. She was fully clothed. She had a skirt on, button-down sweater, high socks, and a shoe with mid-high heels. Around her neck was a locket with inscription, Patrice, love Uncle Phil. On her left hand, she had a wedding band with inscription MHR, another ring with green stone, and with the remains, there was a plastic stem with leaves. Amongst the other things, there was a pocketbook or a wallet mostly filled with makeup and deteriorated address book. But it wasn't that simple. The address book had been sitting in with the body fluid for a very long time, so getting anything out of it would have had been a mere luck. The investigators had to base their investigation through the content of the barrel, because anything outside the barrel was, you can't take that as an evidence because it has been sitting there for God knows how long. Inside was a mummified shrunk body of a female. She was fully clothed and the styling was decades old, not something a woman would wear in 90s. They looked at the barrel and the findings were that the barrel was manufactured in 1963 and originally was used to hold pigments used to tint plastic and paints. These pigments were no longer made after the year 1972. But that doesn't mean victim was killed then, because anyone can use old barrel, so can be a dead end. Now, the previous owners of the house were looked into. Mr. Cohen, who helped open the lid with the screwdriver, was off hook straight away because common sense. According to the real estate records, the house was built in 1957 and it only had 5 owners. Mr. Cohen owned the house between 1990 to 1999 until the body was discovered. He bought the house from third owner Mr. Salmaghi, who owned the house between 1984 to 1990. He bought it off from second owner Mr. Ebbs, and before him house was owned by the actual builder and the first owner Mr. Howard B. Elkins. Elkins owned the house for 15 years and resided with his family before moving to another city in Florida. While the investigators were looking into the previous owners, the autopsy report was submitted by the medical examiner. The body was of a woman between the age of 25 to 30 years old. Back of her head was completely crushed. She had 10 blunt force trauma on her head, which caused her death. Someone was enraged. Someone was really, really mad at her. It was a very personal crime. The victim was also 9 months pregnant at the time of her death. She had a baby boy inside her. If murderer was the father of the unborn child, he has to be a sick monster. Still, they had no leads on who she might be. They had a name, Patrice, in the locket, but no one came forward with any information. Another very common procedure in identifying bodies is checking victim's dental records. She had gold inlay in her teeth, which wasn't done in USA and was commonly practiced in South America in 1960s. She was possibly an immigrant, which answers the question as to why no one ever came looking for her. After much difficulty, detectives were able to retrieve few phone numbers from the phone book. Remember, we are in 1999 and numbers were from 1960s. This can be a dead end leading nowhere because landline numbers were decades old. They called few numbers, some were not active, some knew nothing about the victim, and it was like a roadblock. They were skeptical about it, but what happened next was no less than a miracle. Finding the barrel was definitely work of divine, and this was the missing puzzle. One of the numbers was that of Kathy Andrade. Detectives knock on her door and she had all the answers they were looking for. She was a very close friend of the victim. The victim was Rena Marquin. She was born in El Salvador in 1941. Rena moved to USA in her 20s in search of work. She worked as a nanny for a while and then got a job in a synthetic flower factory in the 60s. Kathy told the detectives that Rena had an affair with her boss and was carrying his child. He had promised her to divorce his wife and marry her. When he didn't honor his words, Rena was furious. She called her boss's wife and told her everything. Rena told her friend Kathy just before her disappearance what had happened and that she was scared. She said that she got a call from her boss threatening to kill her. Rena asked Kathy to come over to her apartment. Concerned, Kathy visited Rena's apartment. The door was open. Food on the stove was warm, but Rena wasn't there. She had disappeared in thin air. Kathy reported her friend missing and she was never found. The barrel was manufactured by a container company in New Jersey and was used to transport a halogen green dye used by plastic industry and was discontinued by 1971. On further finding, it was found that the barrel was shipped to synthetic floral company in Manhattan. Rena used to work for a synthetic flower company and had an affair with the boss. Now things were coming together. Melrose Plastics. The company Rena used to work for was owned by Howard Elkins. Does that ring a bell, anyone? Yes, Howard Elkins. He was the first owner of 67 Forest Drive. He owned the house between 1957 to 1972, and Rena went missing in 1969. He had an extramarital affair with Rena and promised her a family, but turns out he murdered her and their unborn child, stuffed them in a barrel and left them to rot beneath his family home. How did he sleep in that house? So the detectives were able to narrow it down to Howard Elkins. They knew he was the guy. Since then, he had moved with his family to Florida. Detectives flew to Florida and knocked on 70-year-old Elkins' door. They showed him a picture of the barrel and asked if that meant anything to him. He shook his head and said, no, nothing. But he did reveal that 30 years back he had a mistress and they had a clandestine affair for a short while. This was all the information he could provide and said he didn't remember her name or anything about her. They asked if he could remember if her hair was blonde or dark, did she had gold inlay in her teeth? Nothing. He remembered nothing. The detectives asked him to give his DNA sample just to rule him out from the suspects list. They even had a DNA kit with them. They came all prepared, just a little saliva, all they wanted. Elkins started getting all nervous and defensive. He said, "Rule me out of what? I'm not giving my samples. I need to talk to my lawyer." He turned all pale. His demeanor changed. He got all edgy and said, "My wife is going to come back soon, so could you guys please leave?" So while detectives were leaving, one of the detectives stood in front of him and said, "We are going to leave, but we will come back with a warrant, and that warrant will take your blood and we will compare that to the dead baby in the dead woman's body, and that will put you in jail for the rest of your life." Elkins stood still as if soul just left his body. He didn't utter a word. Same night, detectives were informed that Elkins was reported missing by his wife. She told them when she reached home, he wasn't home. In matter of hours, he was found in neighbor's garage. He was in backseat of his friend's car. He shot himself with a shotgun. He knew it was his end. He was soon to be exposed, and he didn't want to go to jail. So he found easy way out, suicide. His DNA was taken and it was a match with Rena's baby. He didn't want to lose his family and his money. So he chose to remove Rena and the baby out of his way. Rena's family back in El Salvador always wondered where she could be, as they had not heard from her for 30 years. A young journalist from Newsday went to track down her family and to give them answers. Finally, after hours of knocking on several doors, he found her family. He broke the news to his mother and her family. Must have been hard. Like, how do you inform family about something like this? This young journalist also wrote a book about Rena. He said, "Imagine losing a loved one and not knowing what had happened to them." This is why I feel crime is not just about bringing the criminal to justice. It's a painful ending of victim's life and manner in which it affects the loved ones for the rest of their lives. It's a scar people live with, and no one really moves from that pain of losing someone they love. This was the story of Rena Marquin. She and her unborn son was left to be forgotten forever, but she fought to be found. She had all the evidence with her for 30 years in the barrel to trace her killer. Thank you so much for being here for this true crime story. Please consider subscribing and liking and sharing. It helps a lot. Thank you so much.